you guys.
You know, I've shown what my worth is, and you know, I'm just looking forward to watching this all develop.
TSN 1200.
How is it going, everybody? Welcome back to the show. If you're just joining us, welcome to it. It is 8:16 here on a beauty Thursday, heading into the long Canada Day weekend. And we know there's no better place to celebrate Canada Day than in Ottawa. If you're going to be staying in Dodge, hopefully you have a good time. Got the celebration. Don't forget, everything's going on at LeBreton this year, which I'm trying to wrap my head around. I haven't driven past, but we're all kind of cognizant of the fact that right now LeBreton is just kind of a big dumping area, right? It's not very pleasant to be in. Hopefully one day may include an NHL arena and a bunch of other stuff.
But well, you can do a tour of the War Memorial, and then you can stand in a dirt area.
The War Museum, you mean.
Yeah, and then watch the fireworks, I guess.
That's
very Canadian.
Yeah, well, I guess, yeah.
Head over to Quebec and grab a cold case, because they always have the chilled beer.
So that's the thing to bear in mind if you are going to come downtown tomorrow, is the fireworks are at LeBreton. So you can't stand where you normally stand. Like, I used to always go to Nepean Point, like across the bridge. It's a beautiful spot because the fireworks get shot off behind Parliament Hill, so it was always a good spot, but... the normal good spots won't be good spots this year because the fireworks are going on in LeBreton. So there you go. A little word to the wise for everybody come staying in town for what we hope will be a great weekend. All right, without further ado, let's get to the hockey talk. So you heard there, you know, St. John winning the Memorial Cup. You heard from Bill Guerin. You heard from Nazem Kadri as well, talking about the fact that he would like to return to the Colorado Avalanche, Stanley Cup champions. Of course he would. Let's bring into the conversation, we believe still from his cottage, TSN hockey insider Mike Johnson. As always, a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. How's the call of the loons this morning, Mike?
There was a couple. I got a lot of birds chirping and chipmunks running around here. I'm kind of in the indoor-outdoor room, so you might get the odd sound of nature, but I'm more concerned. What do you mean you haven't driven by LeBreton lately? Aren't you driving by every day, picturing how the building's got to stay looking, like hotels going over there and restaurants over here, and this is where the pavilion's going to be? Because that's all the rage. I thought you'd have it all mapped out on a daily basis.
It's actually toxic land, so it's not safe to be there.
Perfect.
We're painting the picture of you at the cottage before we get to the hockey talk. Now we know the Mike Johnson we see when you do hits from your house with the throw pillows and everything is perfectly positioned. I'm trying to imagine, let's paint the picture for the listeners of Mike Johnson, cottage guy. Like, are you powerboat, people on the tube? Are you Mike Johnson, water skier? Are you Mike Johnson, solitary kayak canoe guy? Are you, what is Mike Johnson?
Yeah, some combination. I'm Mike Johnson, solitary confinement. I just like the just not a lot of people around. Cottage on an island, so there's no drop in neighbors. It's just, you know, quiet and peaceful. And I don't water ski anymore. I used to wakeboard. I listen to the sounds of nature, but I do a little wake surfing with the kids. We'll do a little paddle boarding. No kayaking because my hamstrings aren't flexible enough. But
nice.
It's good, and it's kind of neat to operate your day-to-day through the water. Like, you know, yesterday, the highlight of my day, there's like a farmer's market. You take the boat over to the farmer's market. You do your shopping for the week or whatever. So, yes, it's a very kind of slow pace, very relaxed, very low-key, which is a good change of pace for me after, a winter that is very busy.
I'm picturing you in one of those beautiful rum runners, and you've got a golf shirt on with a cardigan wrapped over, probably Varnay sunglasses.
Oh, yeah. Boat shoes. Got to have the boat shoes.
Oh, to look. A full Ralph Lauren.
I'm a walking full Ralph.
Okay. Let's get to the hockey talk, and let's start with, the story that's dominating the headlines here in Ottawa, and it's not for a move the sense made, but was made about a player that they were interested in, reportedly, and that is Kevin Fiala, who ends up being dealt to the Los Angeles Kings for a first-round pick and a Minnesota-born defensive prospect in Brock Faber, and then gets a long-term extension at close to $8 million per year. So maybe first and foremost, a thought on the deal and the Fiala fit with the LA Kings.
I think everyone saw this one coming. You understand the unique nature of Minnesota's salary cap situation because of the buyouts to Parise and Suter. They have upwards of $20 million off their cap in dead money. So they just couldn't afford everyone after a really successful year last year. So you knew a trade was coming, and it would have to be for futures, right? They don't want anyone who's making NHL money right now. So I think getting a first and Brock Faber, who I think he's a second-round pick, but he played World Juniors a couple times. He's played in the Olympics. He's a pretty accomplished defensive defenseman in college. Probably will be a top-four defensive defenseman in the NHL, maybe along the lines of a Zub kind of player. So there's value in that guy. I think that price would be palatable to multiple teams. I think two parts of the equation, though. So you work out the trade, and if you're Ottawa, you're like, okay, that's essentially a first. Be later than Ottawa's first and what, Jacob Bernard Docker or something like that? Like, seems like that's kind of the parallel trade offer. And you might be willing to do that. The $8 million extension offers some, to say the least, for a team, for just about any team in the league. Because Kevin Fiala had an exceptional year. I think he had 85 points last year. But he's a career point seven game, 55 points, 56 points in an 82 game schedule. That's a lot of money, and the Kings can afford it because they have Brown coming off the cap. They have Quick coming off the cap soon enough. They're going to be able to afford everybody they want until the cap jumps up in a couple of years. So they're uniquely positioned to take on that amount of salary. But if you're Ottawa, like, if you sign him for that, Josh Norris gets more expensive, and everyone you try to, you know, slot in along the way, Timmy Stützle gets more expensive in another year. Like, those contracts become harder to absorb. So that's the challenge. When I saw the contract, my first thought was, good for Kevin Fiala, who's going to have a great time in Hollywood the next half decade, because that guy is a marquee billing, playing and looking young man. He'll have a good time out there. But that's a contract that not many teams would, even if you could afford it, would kind of want to afford, because that's a lot on one decent year. And my last thought on it is, the other guys who need contracts, who are good players, whether you're Gaudreau, Tkachuk, Forsberg, Kadri, all those pending UFAs are like, we have been better than that guy for quite some time, and he just got paid $8 million. So what does that make us worth? More than $8 million, which makes those Calgary Flames not very happy.
And bigger picture to that, MJ, people focused on all the teams up against the cap. There are lots of teams like Anaheim that I think have $43 million. Do you not see the restricted market and the unrestricted market as far as the top players just going bonkers this summer?
There will be offers for a lot of money. And every guy who signs a new contract, right, you're taking into consideration finances, probably first and foremost. You're taking in competitive balance of the team. Like, where's the team at? Do you want to play for a Stanley Cup contender, or do you want to be in Anaheim where they're not quite there yet? And then lifestyle, right? And all three things are really very important. And all three things are justifiably important to each individual guy. Like, if a guy wants to take less money to play in a hometown or somewhere he wants to be, that makes sense. Some guy like Jack Campbell wants to say, listen, I got $6 million in career earnings, which is not a lot by professional athlete standards, and I got to go chase the most guaranteed dollars right now, even if it's on a lesser team. That makes sense. Like, you understand why each guy would make a decision, but you're right. They may not be for Stanley Cup contenders, but there will be teams offering up big money. Anaheim's one of them. Jersey's one of them. I think Seattle has $23-24 million available. They will be making offers to UFAs. So if you want the money, it will be there for these players. And I think some of these teams that have so much room, Simmer, I mean, you're basically budgeting, what, 3 years out? And if in 3 years the salary cap jumps to $90 million, and it might, you know, if things go well, they pay off that escrow debt, well, then all these big contracts are easier to absorb because, you know, a couple years down the road when you're closer to the cap, the cap's going to take a big jump. So there's lots to play here, but all those guys would be smiling knowing that there will be big offers from several teams for their services.
Alex DeBrincat is another name that is most certainly out there. The Chicago Blackhawks have said, we're blowing things up and we're going to burn things down, and he is available. But it would the acquisition cost would be tremendously high, and then there would be the contract on top of that. Mm-hmm. If you're the Ottawa Senators, would you, and again, without knowing exactly what it would cost you in terms of the trade, but and the money, 8.5, 9, 9.5, whatever it would be, like, would you look at DeBrincat as A, being a much improved trade than a Kevin Fiala? And is Ottawa, again, in that right spot where they would do that and should do that?
Yeah, well, he's been certainly better than Fiala's been throughout his career. I think if you look in the last 3 years, he's he's like fourth in goals. He's right up there. Now, he plays with Patrick Kane, and he plays in a system that is all offense and no defense, and it doesn't really matter what happens away from the puck. So you have to take that in consideration. But I read we should want him on the team. Like, $9 or $10 million, like, that's just so much money for a guy who's not a top 10 player in the league, and he's going to get a top 10 salary. The number of wingers that make over $10 million, work with me here. I think it's Panarin, it's Marner, and I think there's one more. There's three guys that play on the wing that make more than 10. Is Rantanen in those group, in that group? I'm not sure that he is, but, or sorry, not Rantanen, is DeBrincat in that group? I'm not sure that he is, but he's a very good player.
Right.
But I read they're asking for like four or five pieces, like first round picks, top prospects, all the rest of it. And it's just, at some point, you know, the ask would be too much, no matter how good DeBrincat is, to make a trade that way. But I would have, as good as he is, and I just would have a hard time paying DeBrincat upwards of $10 million. I'm not sure in Ottawa, playing in a different system with different players, you know, he's quite as great a goal scorer. I would pay him Fiala's contract and do that happily. I just don't know how much higher than that I would be comfortable in going.
Yeah, and he scored his whole life. MJ's a young guy, now 5'7".
Yep.
And I'm not going to go quite, but I look at Joe Thornton, what he did for a guy like Jonathan Chichu, and I'm not going to say he's going to fall apart. But as you just said, he is playing with one of the best players on the planet. In a, you know, they don't care if they win or, well, lose. They just score goals. You'd have to be really fearful of building around that.
Yes. Like, I think he would be a great complementary piece if you have really good forwards. Like, I think, you know, put him with Stutzler, put him with Norris, put him with a top six, like a good centerman. He's shown he's just always scores. He always will score. And he's not a terrible defensive player. You know, he's got some awareness there. But, you know, it's just that kind of salary and that kind of acquisition cost, it's got to be an absolute no-brainer, 100% certainty that this guy will be exactly what we are expecting him to be. And for DeBrincat, he's going to be good and he will always score. It's just, I'm with you. There are some question marks for that much money. The age is nice because you're going to get him through your 30s, but, you know, I'd rather get Philip Forsberg for that amount of money if I could, than DeBrincat. You know, he's proven to do it in a different kind of way. So that's the kind of conversation to be having. All teams around the league, if they're going to ponder a trade of that significance for a guy like Alex DeBrincat.
So in your opinion, with where Ottawa's at right now and what they've signed and what they still have to sign that's on their team right now, it sounds like you're saying that I wouldn't be shopping in the BMW dealership. I'd be more at the Chevrolet dealership if I'm Pierre Dorion.
If I could find a good sale on a BMW, I'd go there. Like, you know what I mean? But I think there's some, you know, I think you got to sort out your goaltenders. You absolutely have to get a top four defensemen before you go get DeBrincat. Like, scoring goals probably shouldn't be as big a problem for Ottawa as they should be trying to keep them out of their net. Like, I think that's where they should focus their attention first. And if you got to go shopping in the expensive aisle for that, be more willing, because that's a greater need. And then poke around the offensive players, and maybe that leads you to not get the top one or two or three guys, but there's other pretty good offensive players down the road that you could find that could score 25, 30 goals on a good team like Ottawa. So that would be my list if I was Pierre Dorion. But I don't know, Simmer. You got all the trades. I'm curious to think what you thought of this, because I know you've been pushing Fiala and how great he would fit with Switzerland. I'm with you.
Yeah.
But when you see that contract and that acquisition cost, was that something that you think Ottawa should have done?
Oh, not at all, MG. I don't like the costs, and I'm fearful of really the mix. Now, it sounds funny, because in the short term, there's no doubt he makes you a better team. But by the time you pay Stutzle next year to pay Norris this summer, I kind of look at the big four, MG, and say they should fairly quickly, if I went with Batherson and Stutzle, Norris and Tkachuk, make other players better. And is it always allocating that much money to people? And then I'm not sold on Fiala as you get to be a better program to the playoffs. And as far as DeBrincat, I wouldn't even touch that kind of thing. That scares the bejesus out of me. Even go back to Bobby Ryan and his production when he was in Anaheim to coming here. And what it also points me to, the restricted market's going to be crazy. Unrestricted will be crazy. Now, we talked about Killorn the other day. Does it not point to a guy like Keller in Arizona where you say, okay, There are ties there. It has been talked about. Now I have fixed costs. Is that not way more realistic for a team like Ottawa?
Yeah, except for the cost, right? Like, yeah. I mean, the UFAs don't cost you anything to get. They just cost you a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah.
RFAs or guys who are already signed a term, they don't cost. You know the money, and the money's more reasonable. And Keller's would be reasonable. He had a really nice year last year.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on him as a player, MJ?
I like him. I think he's grown a lot in the last couple of years. It's tricky to evaluate, too, because Arizona's been such a difficult spot. Gets to play with kind of freedom there. They're generally chasing games. He's their best offensive player without a ton of other offensive players around him. He made Nick Schmaltz almost a point-a-game player at times throughout last year. I really like him. As an offensive guy, he's very, very good. And his contract, which was seemed high, might seem quite palatable after what you see flow around this summer. But I just think it would cost an awful lot. But I like him. So guys like that, or better yet, if you're Ottawa, go to the teams that have salary cap issues, right? Go to the Killorns or the Pilots. Like, look for the teams that are completely pressed up against it. The Islanders, Beauvillier, whoever, and try to see if you can't use your financial flexibility as leverage to get a good player and not pay quite the astronomical acquiring cost because you're doing a bit of a solid taking salary off the books.
The buyout window opens across the NHL tomorrow, and Ottawa has, probably two options, but maybe a third, but of Colin White and Delzato and then Matt Murray. Would you do, if you were Pierre Dorion, if you got sign-off from the board that's acting on behalf of ownership, got sign-off, would you buy out as many as three players? If not, which are the ones, if any, that make sense to you?
Refresh my memory. Can you buy out three guys in a summer? I don't think you can. I think you can only have two buyouts a summer, can't you?
I believe so, yeah.
I think it has to do with, though, if you go to arbitration with players, doesn't that, and I don't know whether that's happening with the Sens or not, but, okay, let's limit it to two.
Anyway, yeah. But I wouldn't do all three anyways. Matt Murray's contract, that's going to be, I'm not exactly sure the structure of it, but that buyout seems relatively costly. I don't want to do that one. Delzato, I could just live with him being in the minors for another year and kind of eat the 900 or whatever difference it might be between the NHL and the minor league salary. So I'm going to say no to that one. And unfortunately, I don't want to pick on Colin White, but the age thing is so pivotally important in this, right? He's at the age this summer, where if you're younger than 26, I think it's 26, the buyout is only one-third contract, as opposed to if you're over 26, it's two-thirds. So, it's twice as much money. This is the last year they could do it for one-third, and one-third is not nearly as, penal as the two-thirds. And, that contract is just not value there. So I would take a hard look at Colin White. If I had to make a good call right now.
Yeah, and it's funny, guys, as you go through these, because for a lot of different reasons, three of the four I don't want back next year. I don't want Zaitsev back because I don't want the coach ever to play him. I don't want Delzato back because he didn't want to go to the minors at the end of the year, and it never worked. I don't want Matt Murray around because this has never worked on any level. And Colin White is the only player that seems to fit into your program, but totally agree with what you're saying. Do you know what I mean? That's the funny part. And so my summary at the end of the day, I'd like to make all four of them go away.
You'd like to, but...
But I don't even mean via buyout. Yeah. Oh, no, for sure, MJ. If you dealt with this, if you were a money organization, though, the Delzato and Murray situations never worked, but at the same time, you can't pass by White. And then also on Zaitsev with the bonus money, that's more likely chewing on some cash and moving them. So it's just, that's a funny debate as well. You get into finances, you get into team building and all the other aspects that go into this.
Yeah, and it's fun. But DJ Smith has an appreciation for Zaitsev. You know what I mean? He doesn't mind having him around and playing him. Clearly, he plays him quite a bit. So I think to get rid of Zaitsev, you're probably going to have to eat salary or add a sweetener to get rid of that. But I'm with you that depending on what else you have, that's not a bad idea. Delzato, I know Mike a little bit. I don't know about the personality issues, but I think just he makes low enough that I'll just send him to the minors if I don't want him on the team.
Yeah.
Eat the salary. It's the equivalent of buyout anyways, and just deal with that. the Murray and the White are the two conversations worth having. And it's amazing, like, around the Toronto market, guys, people keep asking me, Murray a viable option for the Leafs? I'm like, I'm not so sure. But so I don't know if there's a market out there for Matt Murray. I have no idea. But if that ship has sailed in Ottawa, and I don't even know how healthy he is right now. Is he healthy to be traded? You can't trade injured guys, so I don't even know where that's at. You can't buy out injured guys, for that matter.
He cleared his physical, though, but you're also talking about a concussion, right? I mean, yeah, but yeah. What is that? You know, you could show up in training camp. So, no, we talked about that yesterday, kind of. Would you be thrilled to send him to Toronto? Would you be nervous to send him to Toronto? You know, a lot of layers to it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you would be okay with him going to Toronto, if you're Ottawa, I guess I'd put it. And even if he plays well in Toronto, and Toronto's a good team and he wins a whole bunch, whatever, I still think your team will be better off for it, you know, financially and the structure going forward. And that's your primary concern, whether a rival plays well. If I was running an organization, I wouldn't care so much if he goes plays well for a rival. I'm just like, is my team better off? Okay, they are. We'll move forward with that.
Okay, last one for you. By the time we reconvene with you on Tuesday, you know, that's you know, 4 days down the road. A lot. Are we going to see a ton of stuff, do you think, over the next 4 to 5 days? The draft is a week from today, next Thursday. Or do you think it will take kind of Wednesday, Thursday next week before we see a lot more dominoes, Fiala-like things going on?
I still think it might be quiet. Long weekend here in Canada. You know, the managers need a break too, no, I think. And July 4th coming up in America, for that matter. So I think it'll be relatively quiet till we get right on the edge of the draft. I think Bill Guerin just kind of preemptively took that one. What we might see is some clarity on, like, Forsberg or Gaudreau, like some of those big UFAs, and whether they might be in line to get traded if they can't get it done with their existing clubs right now. But I still think we might relatively quiet and then get busy around the draft and then heading into the week leading up to free agency.
All right, good stuff. Do we have a loon, Kenny? A loon for Mike to send him off into his long weekend? There we go.
Oh. There it is.
Oh, so good. So good.
Like the Masters.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Canada edition.
My sound system is playing loons all.
Yeah, there you go. All right, good stuff. Enjoy your long weekend. Really appreciate the time this week, as always, and we'll chat again with you on Tuesday.
Little flats tonight, guys. It's beautiful there.
Okay, see you later, Mike. There is a great summer song. A little Canadian content, too, on this Canada Day Eve. Welcome back to the show, everybody. 8:45. On this Thursday morning, JR, Simmer, and Kenny sitting in for our Hammer this morning. Triple D, by the way, wanted to throw a wrench at me because I have been saying Canada Day properly for the most part and not Canada, which usually is how people pronounce it when they've been into their cups too often. So happy Canada Day, and here's the wrench for me.
The guy is drunk.
There you go, which a lot of people will be tomorrow, presumably. So there we go. Okay, so we got the Canadian music going on, and speaking of great Canadian entertainers, Russell Peters, born and raised here in Canada, is coming to Canadian Tire Centre on July the 26th. He's got a great comedy show. It's a tour going on, The Stop in Ottawa. If you would like to be at the show, we're going to give away not one but two pairs of tickets to the show right now. So callers 14 and 15 will each win a pair of tickets at 613-750-1200 or star 1200, a free call on Bell Mobility. Callers 14 and 15 each will win a pair of tickets and are on their way to see comedian Russell Peters at Canadian Tire Centre on July the 26th. All right, coming up after 9, Jeff Avery, color analyst for the Red Blacks here on TSN 1200, will join us. We'll set up tonight's game. BC Lions in town. Looks like a great night if you're looking for something to do to kick off the long weekend and you're going to be in town. Be great to take in the football game. Brendan Gallanders, who is going to play for the Red Blacks tonight. I just follow him on social media. He's tweeted out, it's a Red Blacks home game, and it's not raining. So, unfortunately, well, you're at the first game, right, Simmer? Unfortunately, that we had that, off and on rain about four different times.
Yeah.
People were putting on their rain jackets at the last game. Tonight looks great. So, from a weather perspective, all the more reason to take it in and make sure you wear red.
Yeah, and just want to advise a lot of people out there, Jared, I don't know if you heard, if you're a CAA member, on select seats, you can get 10% off Red Blacks games. Another reason to go to getcaa.ca.
Okay, absolutely. That segued beautifully on that. I didn't even know that was coming. Nicely done.
Yeah, we got that in there. But, you know, it's funny you say that about the rain. I recall, or it feels like the first 4 or 5 years, everything felt gorgeous, to be honest with you. And I used to do the show out there, and It felt like there was actually a great run of great weather. And then I know we went into some storm situations, but my overall perception is it's been pretty darn good, the games I've been at.
There was always, it seemed like, you're right, in the first few seasons, it seemed like the weather for the most part was good, but there was always one game in which it was either torrential downpour for entire game or a crazy thunderstorm came in the middle of the game or something like that. But the last couple of, well, they didn't play 2 years ago, but last year and, well, game one this year, it seems like it's raining more often than not.
Yeah, and it's funny because you look at this in kind of the event, and we do not have tailgating like they have, I believe, in Calgary, Jaron. I don't know whether CFL teams have. But gosh, you think about the American experience. I used to go to University of Maryland games and go to a Redskins games or a Pats game. It's such a big part. And in essence, in Ottawa, the surrounding areas, which you are covered, but still, it's a big difference, right? I mean, it is so beautiful for people to show up early for the patios, to go into the game, hang out, do all your watching and socialize, and then hang out after. It certainly adds to the whole experience. And hey, it looks like a gorgeous one tonight, so hopefully they pack the stadium.
Mm. And it'll be our first chance to check out Canadian-born quarterback Nathan Rourke, who has been setting the CFL on fire through 2 weeks. We'll see what the Red Blacks defense can do with him tonight at 7:30, by the way, is the kickoff tonight, and our pregame show begins at 6 here on TSN 1200. We'll be live from the field, beginning with the drive, Lever Sage and Graham Creech this afternoon at 2 o'clock. Should mention that Farhan Lalji, long-time TSN football reporter, of course, stationed out of Vancouver, is going to join the boys on In the Box at noon today and talk about Nathan Rourke and the Lions. I should also mention that Rick Bonus will be on the show at 11 o'clock this morning. Bones, of course, just stepped away from the Dallas Stars. Did he officially announce his retirement? Or it seems like he's done, right? When we talked to him during the pandemic, he got the great place out in Nova Scotia, right, the retirement home, which he hadn't quite retired at that time. Feels like maybe he's done. He gave it a long, long go.
One of the things great about having retirement homes in a place like Nova Scotia, Jer, is not being there between September and June. And I'm being sincere on that. And I remember the best one was ever was Jyrki Lume and how his family wanted to get back to Finland when they were done. They did one winter there, and they're like, man, this was great in the summertime. I'm heading back. But, hey, I think for Rick Bonus, you just kind of say to yourself, and this would be, I don't know if it worked, but I look at a guy like Marty St. Louis. That just, to me, is just a guy like that that isn't coming in to take your job and can help you out. And, you know, I think he's so bad. I mentioned Jacques Martin. Jacques would be great, but has he been there 3-4 times already?
Jacques?
it really does. Like, I respect what Montreal fans say and how excited they are. But, man, come on. Like, this guy needs some real support. And having a guy like that around, I know how great he was for Jimmy Montgomery. I know it went sideways for Monty in Dallas, but he's a type. If I'm Montreal, I'd be all over him.
Jim Montgomery?
No.
Oh, Rick Bonus.
Bring in a Rick Bonus. Yeah.
I think that Rick Bonus, who has been a head coach several times, including, of course, here in Ottawa, and an assistant coach forever as well, I believe that he has the most games behind an NHL bench is either a coach or an assistant coach without winning the Stanley Cup, I believe.
And,
right?
he just has the most games in history, does he not?
Maybe that, well, that too, yeah.
Yeah,
well,
yeah,
then, and
yeah.
Then it would stand to reason that he'd had the most because he hasn't won the Cup. Unfortunately for Rick, he's come close, including being an assistant in Tampa just before they won the Cup. So anyway, Rick Bonus will be on with the boys at 11 o'clock this morning on In the Box here on TSN 1200. Our TSN 1200 Tool and Equipment Store web poll question for you today. What's the best move for the Sens? Of course, Kevin Fiala was dealt yesterday to L.A. It seemed like Ottawa was in at some point, maybe right up until the end, and whether it was whatever the acquisition cost would have been or the contract for Fiala, whether Ottawa was not willing to pay for that or whether Fiala didn't want to come to Ottawa. Could be any of the combination thereof of those three. Our question is this: what's the best move for the Sens? Is it a DeBrink? Is it a trade for a DeBrinket type top six forward? Is it a trade for a Jake Chychrun type top 4D? Or is it just stay the course, keep her going? Good prospects still coming, including the likes of a Ridley Gregg and a full season, hopefully, of Shane Pinto, etc. And the number 7 pick, which we don't think is going to make the NHL this year, but you know what? Could be in the NHL maybe as soon as next year and certainly the year after that. Stay the course, slow and steady as they've been doing. Is that the right way to do it? Right now, by your votes, 47% are looking at the defenseman. Mm-hmm. 40% are saying the top six forward, and 13% are saying stay the course. So that tells me that 87% of Ottawa Senator fans listening to TSN 1200 and voting on our Tool and Equipment Store web poll question want Pierre Dorion to do something and do something rather large.
Yeah, and to that, JR, if I was looking at this rationally, in a sense of you're not worried about jobs, you're not worried about necessarily selling tickets, which you're always worried. But if you took a step back and said where your franchise is at, to me it would be such an easy answer of it would be the top four defensemen all day long. And I'll use Jake Chychrun as an example. My only question is how good of a player he is. I assume he's good. The little bit I watched last year, he struggled, but guys have down years. If you want to present a young man that you come in to make your program better, if you think is a left shot, he can play the right side with Sanderson or Shabbat, you know, that situation there all day long is going to solidify without going out to my point or making the point of without forcing anything where you do make something short term to be a tad better, but long term. And more importantly, I don't care if they even brought in Fiala, Jer. If they do not address that defense going into next year, it's going to be another really bad year. It is just not good enough. And the part of, and this is your $64 million investment in Shabbat, unless he plays with Zub, you don't have anybody for him. And as you transition Sanderson, JBD, and Thompson in, you realistically don't have much of that either, especially in the top four.
I'm always about the defenseman. So you would vote for defenseman on that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I would be as well. And it's funny because, and maybe it was because Fiala got traded yesterday, it's magnified the whole top six forward Alex DeBrincat talk.
Yeah.
You know, what we don't know. And beyond Jake Chychrun, I think we've heard fewer names, probably because defensemen are harder to come by, right?
Oh, God, yeah.
You know, NHL experienced defensemen who could fit into a top four. Everybody wants those players.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't just hear about as many names, so maybe there's less talk. But that doesn't mean that a team like Ottawa, maybe it is their top priority is to solidify that.
And you think of the layers of, and I'll just use Tampa as an example. How do I accomplish what I did on my defense? Well, I get a real higher pick in Victor Hedman, which not always easy, but okay, you got there, JR. And then I turn around and give up a third overall pick in Durand to get Sergachev. He's a young guy, just coming out of junior. Then I turn around, I don't know how the hell they got Chernik for Bishop. And then you get for Ryan McDaniel towards the, and I don't want to say the end of his career, still a very good player, but the three different layers of how do you find those players? Well, yeah, it's not easy. Then you go through other teams and the circle or whatever, the amount of line of players that have come through Ottawa of defensemen that just flat out can't even play or help what's going on. And I think we kicked this off with our good friend Ron Hainsey. You've just got to stop that as well. You've got to bring in guys now that can stabilize and help you. And you know what? Hamonic and Holden in the third pairing chair do that. But they don't do what is needed for this organization right now as a legitimate top four. And let's face facts, like you just said, like it's not like there's all of a sudden. That's up to your scouting staff to identify. And beyond Chychrun and you hear some other names mentioned. But, yeah, everybody's looking for them.
Yeah. Right now it's sitting at Shabbat and Zub. And I think the hope is that Jake Sanderson is going to step in, and whether it's initially or halfway through the year or whatever, that he is very quickly going to assert himself as a top four defenseman
on
this. And I got a great deal of confidence based on what I've seen that I think it's going to happen sooner rather than later. Is it happen right off the bat? I can't say that for sure, but I'm really confident that he is a big, big time player.
Oh, he is for sure. But his transition, JR, just, you know, like I said, what he needs, I just need stability. And I do go back to Ron Hainsey when he played with Morgan Riley. Wasn't anything flashy, but at that point, he still had enough, was very smart. I just need a stabilizer. And unfortunately, from what I saw out of Hamonic down the stretch, and obviously Zaitsev, nobody is able to provide that. So totally agree. And it's also something a little hard to forecast. Like, now you're paid to do that. Mm-hmm. And I totally agree on Sanderson. There's nothing that doesn't point to it. But, you know, it's hard to know exactly how it's going to transition. But I'll tell you, I know for sure. Be a hell of a lot better if he's got a real nice veteran next to him. And if that's Zub and somebody else was Shabbat, that would also work.
Yeah. So if the acquisition, and now what has made, if we're going to go back to the Jake Chychrun conversation, what has made the acquisition cost on him so high in Arizona, you know, they quite publicly put him up for auction, it seemed, at the trade deadline last year, is that he has, and I know his year last year was a down year compared to the year before, but the contract that he's got three more years at about $4.5 million per year. Like if we're talking a solid top four D, if not you know, in the right situation, maybe a top two. That's a very palatable contract for anybody. So you're paying more because he's on a great contract as well. And they obviously aren't and shouldn't give him away. They didn't give him away at the trade deadline. Obviously, nobody met the price they wanted. There's zero reason to think that the price comes down, as now we've got 31 other teams that are looking to either upgrade their team or move some pieces around that are back in the bidding for a player like Jake Chychrun at the draft. So I got to think whatever they were asking for and thinking they were getting at the trade deadline, it's that, if not more, at the draft.
Yeah, no, for sure. Now it's about the market share. And going back to the deadline, a Jake Chychrun is a trade any team would want to make. Doesn't have to be a contending team, but the little bit I saw, if I'm sending my scouts in to say, hey, let's bring a guy in right now, if you watch him play and he's not playing well, for the here and now, you might say, boy, I'm a little nervous of where he's going to fit in. But now you're back to the draft and you have a reset. And as I said, it's a down year. If you really think he's a good player, yeah, there's every team in the NHL that would be interested in that. And I guess you keep – and I, again, knowing, obviously, you're talking about one of the classiest families on the planet. But I just wonder how low can Arizona go? And then I also – not that I know – but he may just also have said, listen, I can't do three more years of this, right?
I think he said that.
Yeah, and so that's a part of, and that's the one thing that makes you feel good. Listen, I put in my time here. I just want to go and play, and I would assume, and I know the family spends summers up here, and hey, he's well acquainted.
Good morning to the Chychrun family.
Yeah, he's as much of an Ottawa boy. That and again, you are just getting, like, if you talk about wanting to add to, you know, the class and the
character. Ryan Murray would say good character.
character guy.
Yeah.
You know, he would, yeah, he'd be kind of a dream in that. You just have to be confident exactly where he's at as a player. And like I said, very important, is your coach willing to come off of playing guys on their offside, you know, as a left shot? It has to be a right defenseman in my estimation.
Sanderson played quite a bit last year on his offside, as did Cleven.
That's
so
true.
They certainly
That's
have
true.
A lot of experience. Yeah. Bradbury, yeah. In fact, at times, I think I asked Bradbury when he had him on, the coach at North Dakota. He had a right shot defenseman play in the left side and the left shot defenseman playing on the right side, playing together.
Yeah.
Like both of the defensemen on their, like, he never hesitated for that. And whether he feels that's important as far as the player's individual development, or whether he feels, in addition to that, it's important to have flexibility in his own team for as the season goes on and as you get into an NCAA tournament, as you get into injuries, or that you want to play your top guys as much as possible, and so you're mixing and matching 5D or even 3D, and you got to throw a guy that's on the left side one shift is on the right side the next, whether he's, you know, as the season goes on, just sort of laying the foundation for like that. I saw Jake Sanderson play a lot on the right side.
Yeah, and for right shot defenseman, Jerry, also as well, sometimes once in a while, UND playing on a bigger sheet, it does get a little bit easier to get the middle of the ice. But in the case of Jake, hey, what do? If I'm going to play somebody on their offside, their mobility and their ability to handle the forecheck, get out of trouble, get to the middle, and I just remember that always being a healthy debate in Europe, they would, on the power play, always play their defenseman on their offside because they felt like having the sticks in the middle of the ice. But at the end of the day, Jake Sanders, two Jakes, there you go, the Jake boys, you know, for him, for his mobility and what he does. But again, you just have to be firm on that.
Back-to-back Jakes.
Yeah, hey.
As opposed to back-to-back Jacks.
Yeah, I got to come up with, that's a good one. But Jake Chychrun, Jake Sanderson.
I'll leave it with you. Yeah. Green Dino texts in and says they got to find a way to lessen Shabbat's minutes.
Oh, big time.
Johnny
big time.
Niagara says, how many points per year did DeBrincat get when he will lose when he's not Patrick Kane's line mate?
Yeah.
Chris writes, good morning, guys. To be honest, I was never a big fan of Fiala. DeBrincat would definitely be an upgrade, but I wouldn't want to pay the price Chicago's probably asking. With that said, I think we need a top four defenseman like Jake Chychrun would probably sign, and we could probably sign a top six or bottom six forward through free agency. I agree that the core that we have now is competitive, but I believe we're still a couple of pieces away. That comes from Chris.
Yeah, Chris, I agree. And then you also have to look in-house, and very importantly, what are you going to do with Zubin and Connor Brown? I mean, if Connor Brown leaves and you bring in kind of that stopgap guy, are you really any further along?
All right, keep the text coming and the wrenches as well. We'll get to more of those coming up in the next hour. Kenny, do you have the names of our winners of the tickets for Russell Peters?
Good old George and Andy.
George
are
and
the winners.
There are two individual winners.
Two individual winners, not Georgie, Andy.
Okay, congratulations, George. Congratulations, Andy. You and a guest off to see Russell Peters at Canadian Tire Centre July 26th. You know what? One more pair. Because this is a short week. No show tomorrow. We'll have another pair of tickets next hour. And we'll have our usual Friday movie passes to Landmark to give away next hour as well. In addition to a conversation with Jeff Avery to set up the Red Blacks home game with the BC Lions. Tonight, more of your wrenches upcoming. We promise. Somebody asked the Friday song. Hammer's not here. Kenny's found the Friday song. We'll have the Friday song Thursday edition. Make sure you get into the long weekend on track. So we'll have that for you. More of your texts, emails, tweets about everything else going on right here on Sports Radio, TSN 1200.